A Gathering of Days, A New England Girl's Journal, 1830 to 1832, a novel by Joan W. Bloss. Chapter 17. Wednesday, September 21st, 1831. With many a tear did we wave Sophie off. She who mounted the stage steps bravely, 2 days past the end of the term, and scarce more since her birthday. Many a keepsake was presented to her, but I observed she had pinned to her bodice a tiny ring of braided hair. Asa's by braided hair, Asa's by the color. In other words, she recognized that Sophie had a lock of Asa, Catherine's brother, his hair pinned to her bodice. I had not known how dear you had become. Dear Sophie, I wish you well. Thursday, September 22nd. Aunt Lucy's wedding will take place on Sunday, sooner than we thought. Maman once asked, will I wear the bonnet which she had sent from Boston and which is still untried? I would like to do it to please her, but cannot, will not. Won't. The Sabbath and a wedding. Aunt Lucy's marriage was celebrated on this very day. Scarcely any were gathered there who'd not been present short weeks ago when Cassie was laid to rest. All the shipmen were dressed in black, save Aunt Lucy in bridal white, to which some gave poor comment. I wore my Sunday best, printed muslin, and a brooch, once my own mother's, to fasten up the throat. Father wore his wedding jacket, very handsome, I must say, as was Maman, her hand on his arm, in her dark green silk. The ceremony was very brief. Truly, I think we had never been so short a time in church. Some item of business having been forgotten, scarce had the newlywed pair gone off, but that they returned. Cheers, jeers, and laughter greeted them, and Mr. Perkins called out, had enough already? No, sir, Uncle E shot back, but after so fine a wedding trip, I thought to try another. Aunt Lucy blushed most prettily, and this time, when they started off, we knew they were gone to stay. Thursday, September 29th, 1831. Today, through the post, came a packet to me labeled in the same crude hand that once had spoken a runaway's need, to which our quilt had answered. I had not thought to see again those square, crude, awkward letters. Yet, in an instant, I knew the signer and the source. Hastily, I undid the seals. I opened the opened package, disclosed to me two matched pieces of crocheted lace, and once again, that writing. Sisters, bless you. Free now. Curtis, in Canada. Thus all doubts were settled. The man we had helped had indeed been a slave, and having been neither fugitive nor phantom, was now in Canada, free. But, sisters, I puzzled, and two bits of lace? Then how bitterly did I weep. One was meant for Cassie. Oh. Wednesday, October 12, 1831. The start of winter school. I walked with Maddie, Daniel, and Asa, but far more mindful of those now gone than my present companions. Maman gave me a shawl of her own. That color becomes you well, she said, and placed it across my shoulders, knotting it in front. For just a moment her eyes caught mine, yet neither of us could speak aloud the thoughts so deeply felt. This year, some scholars are smaller than Maddie. She so proudly promoted, sits on the second bench. Concerning the teacher, I like him not. His face is triangular, small and pinched. He sniffs and coughs for emphasis, and to conclude each statement. "'Tis painful to think of dear teacher." Oh, no, I'm sorry. Excuse me, this is not him. "'Tis painful to think of dear teacher Orpha as of Uncle Edward Holt, who occupied this place. The older brothers are wary already, and who could fail to observe the switches leaning in the corner? 7 new ones, all freshly cut. And he made plain that he meant to use them to keep order. Joshua was there, whom I have not seen since Cassie's funeral. Thursday, October 13, 1831. Maria, Sophie's sister, says their father intends them all to remove to Ohio in the early spring. He's told there's good land to be had by those who try homesteading. Also, he's weary with the ragged Pickstone farm has had, and the cruel climate. As for Sophie's wages, says he, let them be spent where there's hope. Here he finds no encouragement and small return for his labors. Sophie's mother and the little ones will not go with him directly. Rather, they'll stay till a homestead is reached and a cabin built. I try to suppose what I would do were we to announce such a plan. But there is little danger thereof, father being so very attached, maman so lately arrived. Friday, October 14, 1831. Friday, October 14, 1831. The stencilers were here today, having completed their northerly circuit all the way to North Parson Field in the state of Maine. Now, with the geese, they make their way to a warmer climate. They had stopped at the shipments first, where, as they said, they were greatly saddened to learn of the recent loss. She was a lovely bit of a thing, sad how they go, the older one said, and so often taken in summer. Though father said plain he'd no money for murals, they showed no intention to leave. After a time, the bearded one spoke. Got you a wife since we've been here. And a son beside, adds father. A full-grown son, the elderly revised, and after a moment's contemplation, winked at father to elaborate the thought that lay at the heart of the jest. A few months married and a full-grown son, he pronounced with evident glee, evoking general laughter. One way or another, it came out that the painter himself would attempt a likeness of the new mistress, Hall. Using the new camera, Obscura, would so greatly speed the process, a dollar only would he charge, and father, at no extra cost, might himself employ the device for portraits of the children. So it was bargained, and so it was done. Laughing, we each of us took our turn at sitting before the strange device, a large black box whose inner workings deployed the light of a careful arrangement of a series of mirrors. Then, as he showed us, a special lens directs the image upon a paper, which had been placed or so arranged that the image may be traced and then colored in. This last, it appeared, is greatly dependent on the skills of the portrait maker. Though Maman's likeness is good indeed, the ones of us that father made are difficult to admire. Mine, I think, is the worst of all. My brow appears unnaturally broad. My chin is but a nubbin. Sunday, October 16, 1831. Fallen leaves are everywhere, and everywhere too, the spicy scent of newly gathered apples. Soon they shall be milled into cider for the winter's pleasure. Our Uncle Jack, whom we saw after lunch, speaks with approval of Mr. Perkins and says he might do the same. We cannot tell if he jests or not. But Uncle Jack says he's just found out he has a hankering for Ohio or some place to the west. Once a while ago, he said, "You've got Daniel now for help." Another time, as I recall, "At times I think the best I grow is granite stones for fences." Since Mamman's arrival here, he visits us less often. It seems he's often ill at ease, and like as not her influence. And like as not her influence with Father must diminish his own. I have determined to read from the Bible some lines every day. Monday, October 17, 1831. They say the Jew was in Meredith lately. However, we did not see him. Perhaps he's in haste for the homeward journey, it being late in season, and the night's already cold. From our speller, Zeno, hearing a young man very loquacious, told him that men have two ears but one tongue. Therefore, ought they hear twice as much as they intend to speak. Thursday, October 20, 1831. Father down to the cider mill today, also to Holderness. Mamman's book of remedies is come. Also, the bookseller calls to her notice a volume intended as the poor man's friend and prepared especially for those who've settled in the western regions and other lands and territories where doctors are not to be had. Gunn's Domestic Medicine was only published a year ago and claims the latest and most approved treatments for every domestic need. Mamman says she'll consider the purchase, although 'tis priced quite dear. Father has learned that it is being said we've the best kept school in the district. Therefore, are the committee pleased? Who would be so less, I stoutly maintain, were theirs the scholar's place. Each day, it seems, new rules are announced and punishments for their flouting. David, Josh, Daniel, and Asa, nearly all of the older boys, seem determined to try him. They smirk and murmur with insolence, sprawling their legs when his back is turned, and noisily rocking the benches as if they've got uneven legs. Thus do they fairly invite a whipping, which he threatens, but does not perform. I swear, I know not where all will end, but do not like the flavor. Sunday, October 23rd, 1831. This year's harvest being done this day, Father gave Daniel the Barlow knife that was his as a boy. Much did he say concerning its use, and that there is nothing like a Barlow knife to turn an idle hour to a worthwhile cause. But I, remembering the infant Nathaniel and my father's words to him, knew there was more unspoken. Now does the present repay the past and flow on towards the future. Sometimes, long before Daniel came, I used to wonder if I might have Father's knife. Monday, October 24, 1831. Oh, I do think, as has been said, that if getting in the corn and potatoes are the prose of a farm child's life, then nutting's the poetry. Chestnuts and beechnuts are plentiful now, and some hickories. Also, happily in good supply are those which are my special delight, the rich round butternuts. The woods these days are glorious and gold, but there still hover over meadow grasses small bright butterflies. Could these sweet hours but stay and stay? Cruel winter, never come nigh. No, it cannot be. Already we draw to the evening fire, first for its warmth and then for its light on these shortened days. Close by the hearth, I work on my quilt, Maddie sometimes assisting me, her long wool stockings being newly completed, and Maman says she may. My three girls, says Father smiling, and Maman colors, and quick goes on about the rug she plans to hook to her own design. She says the house needs waking to color and more warmth underfoot. The rug is to show a wreath of flowers, each being one that she has seen or plucked since coming here. Tuesday, October 25th, 1831. I said that twice, sorry. How shall I begin to tell it? All my forecasts answered and more concerning the teacher's rage. Joshua was at the center of it, for he provoked the punishment by rising from his place and desk before he was given permission. Add to this that he showed no shame when he was repented, which was reprimanded. Well then, sirrah, and as Josh is taller than the teacher, he made him seem a strutting baton, squawking out his indignation to an indifferent rooster. The hush in the room was as never before. Even the littlest scholars in the room stayed their pens from paper, their chalk bits from their slates. Then, unhappily, a giggle burst forth. Now was the teacher beside himself, and though this last was not Joshua's doing, Josh was called to the front of the room, while with elaborate display, the teacher chose several switches and laid them on his desk. Meanwhile, he was, what is it, harangering. Meanwhile, he was H-A-R-A-N-G-U-E-I-N-G. Harangueing us. Mark you this. I know what that means. And mark not that. And never was heard a sniff or cough, so fast the epithets flew. At last a switch was taken to hand, and the teacher's sleeve rolled up. Then Jay was told to remove his shirt and present his back to the broom. Back to the room. He was far from grinning now, but seemed to me rather grimly determined to see the punishment through. Every breath was held. I believe mine for certain. Every breath was held, I believe. Mine for certain. Are you contrite? The teacher roared and lifted his arm. Whereat, and so fast, we were all amazed. David and Asa bounded forth and seized the teacher, one on each side, while Daniel leapt from the back of the room and opened wide the door, at which, in an instant, all the boys pelted to the front of the room, bodily lifted the teacher up, and pitched him into the yard. Nothing was said of this at home, yet surely the news reached Father. Daniel, I swear, suffers more with father's silence than all the teacher's wrath. The end of chapter 17.